This is Eric Ellefson again, and thanks for listening to the podcast. Today I'm with Bill Latham, who is a leader in the design and implementation of integrated high-impact learning experiences and environments. For more than 15 years, he's consulted with schools, districts, and governmental agencies to design and equip and the implementation of classroom and school environments aligned to critical learning priorities. He's also co-author of Humanizing the Education Machine with Rex Miller, who's a friend of ours and has been on the podcast before. And that's how I got connected with Bill. Bill, you've gone through, you know, quite a bit of significant transformation here in the last few years, going from your company known as Contracts Furnishings to Meteor Education. And you say that, you know, I read an article where you said that allows you to, you know, better fulfill your mission. So what was the impetus for the transition from kind of a furnishings company to an education company?
Well, the journey that we're always on in life is pretty interesting. I started out trained as a chemist, and I worked in the chemical manufacturing industry, research and development. I actually have 3 patents in cosmetic chemistry. And the tender age of 30, walked away from what I had been my life for 9 years and went into the lucrative world of school furniture with my brother-in-law, and really just to be in business. It was a small distribution business in Florida, serviced about 12 districts. And one of the first things that was interesting was how it brought me back around to the roots of education. Mom was an educator. My mother-in-law was an educator. My wife was an educator. We had it kind of in our blood around the family, but coming from a different perspective, that of the environment in which education occurs. And so as a researcher, I was curious from very early on as to whether or not the environment had any tangible impact on learning outcomes for students, the kind of experience they had during the time they were in school, for the staff that were there, did it matter, or was it just sort of window dressing? In getting into some of the empirical research around environments, we found that there were some significant differences that could be created, both in terms of how people work together and the relationships that they formed. And so that became something more of a battle cry for us over time, was instead of, hey, sell stuff and put stuff into boxes of rooms and double-loaded corridors, could we actually have some kind of tangible impact on the outcomes and the learning experiences of students there? And I heard a stat one day, said the average student is going to spend 14,000 hours from kindergarten to 12th grade in this built environment. And that really solidified to me there are things that are significant about the learning space that we could bring to bear. And so what was interesting is we really were around this idea of let's help every community create world-class learning environments for their students. And that was the mission of the organization as Contracts Furnishings. And we put some methodology behind it. We started talking about what does it look like in modern education? How would those environments shift from the kinds of rows and columns you and I grew up in and the teacher at the front of the room and that kind of scenario? And we would help people create these learning environments. They were amazing things. And we'd go into the schools and say, wow, this is going to be fun. Let's see how it's being used. And we'd walk in and find these amazing learning environments being used exactly the same way that the learning environments had been used previously. And so people had put in this, you know, a Corvette, and they were using it like a moped. And it made us scratch our head and say, we could actually fulfill the mission of our organization. I could fundamentally help every community in the United States transform their learning environments and do nothing for student learning experiences because they're not using it differently. And it was when that realization came to us, we said, we have to become a different kind of company with a different kind of mission, or we will fail to make any impact in education.
I've heard you also say, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that you're not necessarily, I think people also maybe sometimes define you as an ed tech company. How is like the space, but then technology, and then everything you're looking at, you know, kind of this holistic approach to just changing, you know, the education of students and the experience of what they go through and the opportunities that they learn in schools.
So the big aha, I think, came for me when I realized you can't separate the way we're teaching, the methodology or the fancy education term, the pedagogy, from the tools that we use, which is the technology today, but also lots of other tools that, that can be employed, hands-on type of tools, and the physical space itself. If you try to separate those things out arbitrarily, well, we're going to change the way that we teach and the kind of instructional practice that we have in a classroom, but we're not going to do anything about the physical space. We find that, that it'll fight that pedagogy. Or we're going to do this initiative in technology. So we're going to go one-to-one with our students, but we have no idea, methodologically speaking, what we're going to do when they all have a device in their hand and we're not really equipped to power those devices or for those kids to share those devices or to even sit collaboratively and work together on those devices. So you find there's an ecosystem. And one of the big strikes against education that you'll find when you ask people, hey, what's one of your greatest pain points, is they talk about the silos that exist. You know, we have the facilities team, the technology team, the education team, and they don't all seem to be on the same sheet of music when it comes to design and the implementation of our new change initiatives. And that's especially true as we think about even reinventing some of those old schools out there that aren't going to get knocked down and rebuilt. But what do you do in those spaces? I think sometimes it would be a mistake to say we're an education company that focuses on just methodology or just technology or just space. What we actually try to help clients both define and then design intentionally is an ecosystem that operates in concert with one another instead of kind of fighting against itself all the time.
On your website, it says that you've now worked with over 1,000 schools, and that probably list is just growing exponentially in these days. Are you seeing schools grasp the coherence making of this process, or what are the successes that you're seeing as schools, as educators, as leaders make this transition in a much more significant way?
I think education leaders, by and large, know where they want to go today. They really have crafted amazing visions of what student learning and experiences are going to be like and the kind of learning cultures that they'd like to create in schools. I think that they also know some of the real tactical problems that they have to overcome, whether it's resources or, we're not equitable necessarily across all of these. And so we need to really think through plans for how we scale this and how we modernize on a more planned, progressive, and programmatic basis. And so what I think is the most difficult area we find are things that you don't write checks for. Changes that you write checks for are very easy, right? We're going to change our environment. We're going to buy some one-to-one technology. We're going to put a new curriculum in. And even though schools are very much resource constrained, it's actually easier for them to write a check than to get the behavioral change that is necessary to accompany those changes in the stuff, we'll call it in quotes. So I get new stuff, whether it's technology or whether it's the space or a new curriculum or a new, you know, learning management system platform to tell me everything I'd want to ever know about this child, but the behavior, the operators of those systems, the instructional staff, seeing themselves and their roles differently, and then that leading to changes in the way that they're acting and the results that are coming out of that. That's the big pain point for a lot of districts. It's not that I can't figure out how to do this. In fact, most districts I know have done some very successful piloting of modern education. They've gotten a classroom that they've, you know, redone. They put in the technology that they want. They found a teacher that has a forward vision, and they put them in there. And oddly enough, the students are having an amazing learning experience. Then they go to scale that throughout the rest of their district. And that's where the trouble begins. How do we start to scale? How do we overcome resistance? How do we help people walk through the change process? And so it's really the transformative issues that are the areas that are challenging today's leadership, because transformative issues always have value conflict around them. It's always questions like, is this an achievement culture or a learning culture? Well, it's not either or. You have to show achievement, but you also have to really prioritize learning. So it's a navigation of what seems to be competing values that really pushes, I think, education leaders today to become much different in how they lead the conversation.
So as you work this out and as you travel all over the place and you meet with these different leaders, what's it going to take or what do you see is it going to take for this to go from kind of that innovation stage to a scalable stage where it has that significant impact on the entirety of the system? I mean, that's a huge kind of question. And I know you've kind of, you've wrestled with that. And that was part of humanizing the education machine. And, you know, wrote an article after the presidential election. And, you know, so when you think about this and even where you're at today, like, how does this go bigger and have a greater impact?
So I think that, you know, that sometimes we're misled with go big or go home. Like, let's fix this on scale. There's no such thing as the American education system. There are thousands of education systems in the United States. They're funded differently. They're, the communities that they support are different kinds of communities, whether they're highly urban or rural or the kinds of industries that are there. The demographics and the socioeconomic status of the constituents of the community can be vastly different. And so there's no fundamental one kind of solution. And that's one of the things that I think in the article that you referenced after the presidential election that I wrote, who's actually going to lead the change? A community has to decide something. They have to decide that education not only is a priority, but that they're going to ask their education system to set up to service the community, and they're going to participate in that dialogue. A lot of times communities, you know, that's those people over there. You know, their role as educators is to educate kids for the future. When I don't participate as a community in that, when I'm not strongly connected in my businesses into those schools and helping drive real world authentic inquiry and helping students sort of connect what would normally be a very abstract concept like math into the world of business or into the world of science or into the world of engineering, that disconnect is not just the school's problem, it is the community's problem. And so one of the first things you find is if the community has not gone through enough pain yet, pain is a very powerful motivator. You know, they say in order, pleasure and then fear and then pain. Now we know that because we live in Florida. And I'll tell you that upgrading my air conditioning so I can get a little bit lower bill from a pleasure standpoint would be one thing. But if I my air conditioner goes down in August and I'm sitting there sweating at night, you know, it doesn't matter how much it costs to put in a new air conditioner, just get out here and fix it. So pain is a very powerful motivator. And what's, I think, not quite gotten here yet is the pain level across the board, ubiquitously, where communities are saying what's coming out of our schools no longer supports the industries and no longer really effectively supports the companies and the kind of society that we need to have. So the students themselves are coming out and some of their skill sets are amazing technically, but do they have the soft skills to integrate properly into 21st century companies? Do they have the resilience to deal with the ups and downs in the cycle of business? It turns out that businesses show up overnight, take industries by storm and disappear as quickly. And I have to be a lot more resilient as a worker to disappointment and to the kinds of challenges that kind of adaptability will create for me. So there's so many different things associated with the cycle of business these kids are going to face. And communities that aren't really in touch with their schools and not just sort of figuring out, are we getting a good grade according to the state, but are the students coming out with relevant soft skills that could translate into our community businesses? They haven't quite gotten to the level of pain yet where they're really, really pushing for the change. And so you have the people in the school system saying, gosh, we really, really got to change. We're watching this disengagement occur. We're watching kids disengage. We're watching policymakers who don't understand this dynamic we're talking about legislate things that are tying our hands and keeping us from innovating. And so aside from just the communities themselves, the communities are going to have to go to their policymakers and say, get out of the education business because you don't know what you're doing. You get out of the way of people who actually want to innovate in this area and stop tying their hands and keeping them from innovating. So I think communities actually being activists within the schools and connecting their businesses and their time into the schools. And then I think communities going to their policymakers and saying, get out of the way and let the innovation flow. Those are probably two of the biggest things. And that's squarely on the community.
So let me ask you one last question. Because if I'm a community member, and a lot of this happened for me as a young teacher where I was dissatisfied. I was even successful and winning awards and, you know, all of those types of things. And, you know, and then became a school leader. And, you know, there was this internal dissatisfaction with what I was doing and how I was doing it because of, what I was having an impact possibly, but the system was so much greater than me, even the schools I was in, districts, whatever it might be. What would be your encouragement, especially somebody who came in from the outside who just wanted to do business, you know, with his brother-in-law and be part of that? What would be your encouragement to somebody who's in the system or outside the system, in a community or part of a school that says, you know what, I want to be part of this innovation. I want to be part of this change. I want to create places where people will engage in the learning process together.
Right. We have to kind of become the change we want to see. You know, it's very fashionable to critique a lot of things like government should, you know, do this and educators should do this. And then I ask people questions like, do you know what happened with the education bills that came through this year in Florida and what the key issues are currently right now that are being debated in the state and what some of the key challenges are in your local community? And people are vastly ignorant, vastly under-equipped to even have an intelligible conversation about these things. And so the first thing that anyone coming in has to do is they have to actually involve themselves and get underneath the rhetoric into the authentic conversation about what is the purpose of school. If the purpose of school, and it fundamentally is that somebody achieves something, they get a grade, they get a degree, they get a certificate, and they get out. That's one camp. And there's a very, very strong camp right now, and they tend to be the ones who are in the policy and power making decisions. But there's another camp, and there's a camp of saying, hey, I think that school actually serves as a proxy for something else in a person's life. It's actually a preparatory issue. Failing actually is a part of life, and learning to fail and learning to fail forward is an important and key element that you need to have. And so maybe achievement is not the outcome. Maybe learning is the outcome. And through that, we have to make it's possible to not only fail. Innovation, by the way, requires failure, but the culture to be one where we expect failure and then progress and failure and then progress. And this gets to even some of the basic things we see kids love. What kid doesn't love to play a video game? And even though they haven't gotten past level 18 100 times, they're still coming at it the 101st time because by golly, if it kills me and if I have to stay up all night, I'm going to get past level 18. Well, we don't create that kind of situation for them in schools. By golly, I'm going to master this concept if it takes me another 3 weeks. No, sorry, we're moving on, Johnny. You didn't get it. And then Johnny falls a little bit further behind, but then there's a little piece of Johnny that gets left there. And so we don't create the kind of culture, the kind of gaming scenarios, the kind of things that we see that's we really drive people and their natural, you know, their natural competition to be better. Those are not the things that we see lauded in schools. It's get it right the first time, get the grade. Sorry about that, you know. And I think that's really where the challenge lies, is people engaging that conversation. Education is about relationships. It's about teachers and students connecting. It's about care. It's about psychological safety to take risks and fail. It's about taking care of the people that are taking care of our kids. I mean, teacher burnout is at an all-time high. You say you were a teacher. Why aren't you teaching anymore? I suspect at some point in time, the system chewed you up and spit you out. It's not everyone's story, but a lot of people's story. And we lose some of our best teachers, and therefore, we're losing some of the people that are front line, helping our children feel valid, helping them feel known, and then trying to speak, you know, influence into their life, whether it's subject matter expertise or character or just, you know, how to relate as human beings. And so I think the first thing somebody has to do when they come to the table and they want to be serious about an education conversation is to become the change they want to see. I'm going to engage authentically, and I'm going to get to know some teachers, and I'm going to get to know my situation here in this community. I'm going to start to advocate on an authentic basis, and that takes time. So, you know, apathy doesn't have a place in that. And that's why I said I think the pain level hasn't gotten high enough, because by and large, my critique of the United States, we become apathetic. We want to see the change. We just don't want to do anything about it. And that apathy means the pain level hasn't gotten high enough for us to start to really engage.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, even as you know, as we close up, two things that I think about, you know, just as a lover of my profession and a lover of education, a couple of things that you mentioned is one, there's 30% less college graduates going into education than 10 years ago. And then the other thing that I've learned is you're right about the, I mean, I agree with you about the pain is there is a sacrifice that comes with the innovation and the change process too. And I people aren't ready, or I have met a lot of people who aren't fully ready for that sacrifice yet. So, Bill, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well, what I was going to say, just one last thing. In the book, we actually look at a taxonomy of schools. And we see schools that move from sort of left behind schools, custodial schools, to schools that have kids that are well-schooled and poorly educated. In other words, they're good at passing tests, but they're missing these soft skills. And then we look at future-ready schools. And it's less than 10% of schools in the United States. And it turns out that the common thread of future-ready schools is that their communities have engaged. And so I just leave it that with a final note is when the community finally engages education and infuses itself into the school and cares about the relevant skill sets that are coming out, that school is going to become future ready as a result of that kind of social capital being infused into it.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate this. Look forward to connecting people with you and just even this conversation so they learn more about you and the great work you're doing. So really appreciate that.
Eric, it was great to be with you. Thanks.